Hey guys, what's going on? Welcome to the NPC's Weekly News Roundup. It is December 23rd, 2022. Merry early Christmas to all of you. Of course, we're going to start off the news talking tonight about 75% of UK respondents are okay with Xbox and Activision Blizzard coming together. We'll also, of course, be talking about Epic Games getting the biggest fine ever from the FTC for $520 million, at least for a video game company, regarding deceptive practices in Fortnite. And of course, we'll also be talking about Valve wanting to take another crack at the Steam controller. Yes, that is right. Their success on the Steam Deck once them makes them want to come back and redo the Steam controller. That and more after our intro here on the Weekly News Roundup. And that's right, we're here, we're live, we're up and running, we're all excited to talk to you guys about the news just before Christmas. Welcome everybody to the Weekly News Roundup. My name is Travis, and of course with me on Discord in his very appropriate Sonic the Hedgehog Christmas sweater, it's Kyle.
What's up?
Well, what's up, dude, is we've got some big news in the world of, well, news in general to talk about, I suppose, man. Let's hop right into it with our big news here especially, and that one is about the respondents from the UK. 75% of respondents in the UK are okay with the Xbox and Activision Blizzard merger. Did I lose you there?
Did you?
Looks like your camera froze. I see you there still on Discord, but your camera froze.
One sec.
You're just staring off into, like, at your screen.
What is going on? Hold on. Oh no.
Uh-oh. Did your camera fry?
No, I think it's, my antivirus all of a sudden decided to...
Antivirus. Okay.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Give me just a moment. Yeah, keep going.
Oh, man. All right, well.
I'll get this worked out.
All right.
Just
as,
a moment.
As you work it out, I'm going to go ahead and read off here this article, or at least read off the details from this article from IGN talking about it. So, yeah, that's right. Our title story here this week, 75% of UK public comments support Microsoft acquisition of Activision. So this is the public being queried by the UK's version of the FTC, known as the Competition and Markets Authority. And they wanted to find out exactly what the public said regarding the merger of Activision Blizzard. And your camera's back.
Okay, there
in regards to, I guess, if the merger was going to be accepted or not. So the public went and shared their thoughts. And it received the CMA revealed that they got over 2,100 emails during the phase, and around three quarters were broadly in favor of the merger, and a quarter were broadly against. So, I mean, obviously, three quarters is good, you know, and then another quarter there. So among the responses the CMA received and shared, and this is from the article, as part of its briefing included views such as Sony and Nintendo are stronger than Microsoft in console gaming, and the merger will help Microsoft compete more closely against them. And the merger is a reaction to Sony's business model for PlayStation, which has historically involved securing exclusive content or early access to popular cross-platform gaming franchises such as Final Fantasy and Silent Hill. Views from those against the merger include responses such as Microsoft is already dominant in PC operating systems, and this merger is an attempt to gain a similar position in gaming, and this would be the largest merger in gaming history, paving the way for a potential string of future acquisitions of publishers such as Take-Two, EA, Ubisoft, thereby increasing concentration in the market. So, obviously, of course, you know, the UK, or at least the public in the UK, out of the 2,100 emails that they received, you know, are broadly in favor of Microsoft and Activision coming together and making sweet, sweet video game love. So, I mean, what's your take on what the UK says? Do you think that's pretty much the sentiment here in the United States?
I think so. I think the big push personally is the fact that Sony is pushing back so much, and that the only clout that is really against the merger is the fact that Sony has come up and said, oh, well, you know, it's going to be against the industry and whatnot. But Microsoft has come out and said, you know, they've already made deals with Nintendo. Mm-hmm. They've attempted to make deals with Sony. Nintendo hasn't even seen a Call of Duty game in how many years at this point? So, yeah. I mean, I feel like a good chunk of the public isn't seeing the broader picture, at least that 25% that's still out there that is kind of against the merger itself. So I don't know. That's kind of where I stand on it.
Yeah. Then of course, like, I mean, I'm one that's for it. Like, I'll put this out there right now, is that I'm for the acquisition. I feel like that Microsoft's culture has changed enough compared to the days of yore, where they were so embroiled in the antitrust litigation anyway, when it came to, like, what was it? I think it was Internet Explorer, that, you know, do I see something bad happening? I mean, in anything in the corporate capitalistic world, obviously there's going to be negative things that do occur. But I feel like with who's at the helm of the Xbox empire, so to speak, not only is it Satya Nadella, the CEO of Microsoft, but also Phil Spencer, the CEO of Xbox, or president of Xbox. I can't remember where that title was at, but he's the head of Xbox. I feel like with their leadership, that's where things are going to be different than it was just Bill Gates being as stubborn as he was leading Microsoft originally alongside Steve Ballmer. There's a lot that's different since the mid-90s that has changed. And we're already at a point now where everything's being consolidated as is. And it's an unfortunate thing with Amazon, excuse me, buying up a whole bunch of companies. And of course, Google doing their thing too. But in the gaming space, look at all of the lack of fury and fire that's going against, say, like Embracer or Tencent or who is it again? Really, it actually is just those two who are in the process of basically buying chunks of these companies or buying them flat out and making them, you know, or basically becoming these massive conglomerates. I mean, look at how big Embracer Group got over the entire time. And I'm not trying to make my argument I'm not trying to point fingers and basically a whodunit here. You know, it's like, well, they also did this too. It's like, I'm just saying that there's already consolidation going on. And in the grand scheme of the consolidation, I think that we're seeing right now, I don't see too much of an issue with Microsoft and Activision coming together. I really don't see it as much. If it was someone like EA, for example, instead, with the number of sub studios they have and the larger influence they have, okay, let's backtrack a bit here and let's understand that that's probably not going to work out. I just don't see the same with the Activision Blizzard and Microsoft coming together.
Yeah, I don't either. And I think one of the things that people are missing too is at the beginning of the year, we have to remember that I'm drawing a blank on his name. Bobby Kotick was actually shopping Blizzard Activision around to be bought, and there we were looking at potentially, you know, after the whole backlash of the Blizzard Activision allegations with or sexual allegations and lawsuits that were going on there, that there was a possibility that they could shutter their doors, you know, within a year or two, or, you know, maybe sooner, just because of the whole process that had gone on, and, you know, all the unfortunate things that had happened, especially that had come out over the course of, you know, early COVID time, I would say. But I don't know, I just see this as a benefit. Personally, there's a lot of games that aren't spread out that could be. I mean, it opens up the possibility to put things like World of Warcraft on more devices. It opens up the possibility for Nintendo to actually get Call of Duty games again. I mean, Nintendo already had, you know, the first Overwatch. It was far later than, you know, PlayStation, PC, or Xbox iteration.
Right.
And, you know, same with Diablo. But, I mean, we could expand on where Blizzard's scope of influence lies. I mean, they do have a little bit that they've released on Nintendo, but let's face it, they could have put out more on Nintendo. And we could see, you know, potentially maybe even some of the classic games come out on consoles again, which would be really neat, I think. I mean, they've had success with games like the Halo Wars. We could potentially maybe see Warcraft come to console.
Yeah,
or Starcraft.
Yeah, and I like the idea of that potentially, that we could see more of those titles for the, you know, I guess what's out there in the Activision Blizzard empire coming out to Nintendo, like to Nintendo consoles, whether it's the Switch or even future stuff. Because you are right, like Overwatch did take a while to get there. So did Diablo. I think Diablo 3 did make it to the Switch.
It did.
But Nintendo's push to be like to try to appeal to those in the AAA market, or at least AAA gamers, by offering the games with sort of the cloud mode or cloud edition of games, mm-hmm. where they run natively off of the Switch. You know, at least it's like Nintendo is trying to make a push to go do something like that. While at the same time, by having Microsoft as a potential partner, it helps to open up that collaboration, though, between the different companies. By, you know, Nintendo, it's like, well, here, let's help with your expansion on the cloud side of things by working together to bring these AAA titles to your console without, you know, by using or leveraging the cloud technology that we've been able to work on, or help you improve what you're already using right now. That way, right. in the grand scheme of it, it kind of falls back into what Microsoft has already been working towards, or at least the Xbox team has been working towards, which is, you know, trying to make games more accessible to everybody. Now, it's not like we're going to see Game Pass on the Switch. I don't see something like that happening. I don't see that being like the end all be all. Thing actually occurring. I'm talking more of like the access to the games and the back end support, more than like here is Game Pass on your console. I don't see that.
Right. Yeah, and I don't see that either. I mean, looking at how the services have kind of grown in their own rights, with PlayStation having developed, you know, their different tiers, and with Nintendo having, you know, their expansion pack, and you know, the NES and Super NES games that you can access. I feel like that's going to stick with them. But there are going to be certain aspects that, you know, in the future, you may have to sign on or use an Xbox ID that you create to log into, like, Overwatch or into Diablo. But beyond that, I don't see there being anything else that they have to do. I mean, people already have to do that with Minecraft, if I'm not mistaken, on other consoles. Well, specifically, I want to say PlayStation, I think. So, why is this not possible? Why can't we make this happen? I mean, Minecraft has existed on these other systems for you know, how long now? And Microsoft's owned Mojang for quite a while, so...
Yeah, and I think that would be like the big red flag for me, especially, is that if, like, with how open and how ubiquitous Minecraft is, especially mm-hmm. like that, we didn't see Minecraft as soon as Microsoft got a hold of Mojang, that they didn't immediately shut down all the access to everything else. Like, Java Edition didn't go away and be replaced completely by Bedrock Edition. We didn't see the mobile version go away. We didn't see the PlayStation version go away. We didn't see the Switch version go away. We didn't see any of these other iterations. We didn't see Microsoft going and issuing DMCA takedown requests for, you know, potentially for Minecraft multiplayer servers, you know, because they weren't using Azure or something like that. We didn't see Microsoft go and lay down the hammer to make Minecraft as isolated as possible. They actually went and expanded it by creating more Minecraft games, by creating more Minecraft experiences, by opening it up more to the community. You know, it's like if they had gone and done everything and laid down the banhammer to make it more their own, then yeah, I would be a little bit more concerned, especially like, yeah, I think I just laid it all out there anyway. But we didn't see that. And you're going to see these situations, especially where a company, when they do get acquired by another big company, it's like you're going to see some more exclusivity and some things happen. Granted, yeah, we saw that with Bethesda. But like, we've got some good examples, though, about like, I think it was made mention in the, I think I made mention there about how Sony does a lot of this already anyway. It's a reaction to Sony's business model. Yeah, it's right here. Sony's business model for PlayStation, which has historically involved securing exclusive content or early access to popular cross-platform gaming franchises. I think what happened is right now is the reason why Sony's reacting the way it did is because Bobby Kotick probably went to them, knocked on Jim Ryan's door and said, hey, we want to go ahead and talk about potentially Sony and Activision Blizzard maybe coming together. They looked at like maybe numbers or something, and Jim Ryan was like, yeah, we'll pass on it. Now that Microsoft's finally jumping in, I think that's why Sony's so reactionary instead of being proactive about it.
I mean, it's a good possibility, yeah. But I mean, Sony still, I maybe is in the mindset of the console tribalism that, you know, I think is going to be disappearing over the next 10 years. Your next generation consoles, they're going to have their differences in services, but I think as far as games, there's not going to be a ton of difference, except for maybe the few and far between first party games that are going to be coming out for those consoles.
Yeah.
It's the only way that I think that the gaming companies are going to have, or are going to be able to make the profits that they'd like to get out of the games, actually, especially when you look at how when PlayStation transitioned some of their games over to the PC market, how much success that it's had. I think it would be silly to not stop practicing the console tribalism.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. In the meantime, of course, though, besides the comments coming out of the public for the Activision Blizzard Microsoft merger, we also had, it's another story that came up this week, though, too, about some gamers out of California filed suit in the Northern District of California regarding they're using a law that was created for the general public to use called the Clayton Act, specifically to file their own antitrust lawsuit against companies when they feel that, you know, there are antitrust actions actually happening. And so these 10 gamers went and filed lawsuits against Microsoft specifically to stop the merger. And so in the article I've got here from Kotaku, because you and I talked a little bit about this last night, you know, there's a lot of talk in this about specifically how much power is going to be held over this, over like Call of Duty, for example. That always seems to be the place that people keep on falling down onto it, is that when Call of Duty is going to be held by just one entity like Microsoft, for example, who not only makes the makes software, but also makes the hardware, that is going to go exclusive. It seems like a lot of the arguments that it had been getting made in here is that it's not necessarily that it's going to necessarily just interrupt competition, and that it's going to cause a major issue when it comes to how games are going to be distributed out there. It seems like there's a lot of just weak arguments as it relates to Call of Duty in general, and how it's going to be unfair that Microsoft's going to own one of the larger video game franchises out there. And I find it funny, though, especially because it's like, well, they already own Minecraft. And sure, by adding Call [S2] Right. [S1] Of Duty, that's going to make them bigger. But at the same time, though, is that the real only disadvantage that other gamers are going to get with, say, like Call of Duty being owned by Microsoft, for example, is that PlayStation is going to lose their one-year exclusivity as it relates to some of those special feature sets, special modes, like what happened with the original Modern Warfare and other games in the past, where Sony actually ended up having those exclusivities for, you know, roughly 12 months prior to anything else getting it. And that's not only just the console, it's also PC as well. So,
right.
Yeah. It's just, it's very interesting, though, why people continue to think like Call of Duty just needs to be the main focus on this, because there's a lot of stuff that's happening behind the scenes other than just Call of Duty. And go ahead.
I just think it's funny that they're so focused on Call of Duty. You know, it's a single IP. Granted, it does do big business, and
it does,
you know, consistently they've come out with titles every year, and I think that that's one of the things that's become an advantage to them, is they've become almost like a sports game. It's just, you know, your yearly Call of Duty. But it's almost like Sony has forgotten that, yeah, Nintendo hasn't had a Call of Duty game. They've managed to generate success without that license for how many years now? Whatever happened to Resistance? Whatever happened to Killzone? We haven't seen one of those games since, well, PlayStation 4 for Killzone, at the beginning of the PlayStation 4, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that.
I don't think there's been a Resistance since PSP, PS3 era.
Yeah,
so,
I think so.
I mean, whatever happened to those shooters? They were quite successful. They were really popular. And, I mean, other than the debacle with, you know, Killzone 2 and E3 having the pre-rendered video and the beginning of, you know, the pre-rendered age of game trailers, whatever happened to them? We're not seeing those. So, I mean, is it just that they aren't able to generate their own, you know, ideas out of those sectors, or what's going on that they feel that they need to rely on Call of Duty so much?
Let's add two more games to the mix on that one. You've got SOCOM, U.S. Navy SEALs, mm-hmm. which is a very popular tactical tactical shooter, especially because, like you and I talked about it, that Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2's third-person mode, their timed event just to, you know, get some feedback on how the third-person works, would actually do very good in the tactical sense. Like, you could see a SOCOM like that. I think both you and I agree to that. And at the same time, though, is like, and this is Sony's own fault for doing this, though, too, is that Battlefield, you know, it's like Battlefield is not necessarily in the same vein as Call of Duty. Like, they've been trying. They really have been trying to regain that foothold that they originally had. But the problem that we've got right now is that Sony, particularly, I think, Jim Ryan, had to go and open his mouth and basically disparage Battlefield and basically say it wasn't up to par, wasn't up to stuff. It's like, no, it's like, if you want to breed the competition, you've got to support what's out there. It's like, by not necessarily making Battlefield exclusive to PlayStation, it's like, work with EA just like you do with Activision to make the effort to make things better, to make the experience better. You know, the only way you're going to get your customers to enjoy a game is just the effort you actually put out on it, though, too. Not just your stamp of approval to say, yeah, this game can be on the console. No, it's one of those things that you need to be able to work with them in tandem. It's like, well, okay, here's our sales metrics for this right now. What can we do to assist with that? You know, or it's like, or other way around, EA reaches out. It's like, okay, well, what can we do to get some help here to make this do better? You know, and it's like, why not leverage the existing stuff that's out there now, and like you said, your back catalog, to make something that brings people back? And you're right, Call of Duty has been rinse and repeat for so long now that even Phil Spencer has said that he wants to take those studios who had been basically pulled away from their classic titles, who have been pulled into now working in Call of Duty, to be rotated back into working on those titles that we all want to see come back out again. So
yeah,
there's a lot more happening than it just being about Call of Duty. And it's annoying that people keep on focusing on just the Call of Duty portion of this. There's so much more going on that I just don't think people are actually seeing here, or they're seeing and they're just, they're covering their eyes because they don't want to see it. Yeah.
They're forgetting about the fact that, you know, the beloved Tony Hawk series, that disappeared because that group of people had to go work on Call of Duty. Spyro, that group of people, it was Crash, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the people that worked on Crash had to go and work on Call of Duty. There are so many games that any of these studios that got absorbed over the last couple years by Activision, they all are working on Call of Duty now, and we're not seeing any of those IPs come out because they're all working on Call of Duty.
100%, man. 100%. Yeah. So, with all that information out of the way, we've still got more details we're waiting on with the Activision Blizzard Microsoft merger stuff happening, of course, because everything's in litigation. Everything's still being reviewed by all these parties. So another wait and see what happens. I'm sure we'll see more details coming into the new year. Now, let's carry on to something different here, because I guess I'm not surprised that we've seen details here now. But Assassin's Creed Jade closed beta footage has leaked out. So Assassin's Creed Jade is a mobile AAA game, again, in the Assassin's Creed universe, that's going to be taking place in ancient China. And so apparently these leaks have come out to show off some of the UI, showing some of the actual combat and some of the action here. And I gotta say, I mean, you know, for a mobile game, I guess we kind of expect some higher quality stuff than Angry Birds and Fruit Ninja. So, I mean, you know, this stuff actually kind of looks pretty good. Like, I can't actually wait to get my hands on some of it to try it out a bit here. You know, did you get a chance to actually look through this and see, like, you know, see any of it at all?
I didn't. I was actually scoping the trailer right at the moment. Just even the cinematic for it, it's very, very modern gaming cinematic, like, definitely not something that you would have seen on even, I would say, probably the earliest PS3 era. Whereas a lot of mobile games, yeah, you get short snippet videos that are kind of neat like this, but nothing to this scope. And then, yeah, you've got the, of course, the actual gameplay footage going, and it looks straight up like footage out of a 360 PS3 Assassin's Creed game. I mean, it's just insane to think that, you know, now our cell phones are actually capable of producing what, you know, we were playing on just, what, 15 years ago?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think that's one of the key things. Like, I've seen already some of the bits here in this trailer, or at least this footage, that, you know, there's some texture popping, you know, once you start actually making your way around. Especially like draw distance is not necessarily the best. Mm-hmm. You see a lot of things like start to pop in and out as you move around. But obviously, of course, this is a closed beta, so it will be optimized over time, at least up until release. But you know, this is all kind of like leading back into what Ubisoft was saying, is that they're trying to get Assassin's Creed back to its roots. And I think for those gamers who maybe want, or who are more on the go in that, though, too, is to have Assassin's Creed actually branch out to a mobile title instead of, you know, some Pokemon Go clone or what have you, you know, into something that actually plays like an Assassin's Creed game. I think that's going to end up being a net positive for it. And I got to say, though, like I said, and I think you've even like, or what, like you just said, though, too, is that the quality of this actually is pretty on point. I think just though, once the optimizations happen over time, it's going to come out actually looking even better. But yeah, you've got this, like, it's all mission-based stuff. It's exactly like what you'd expect for Assassin's Creed. I assume there's going to be microtransactions built into the thing, though, too, that let you build up and pull out different things. But let me see what else here they talk
about. I'm actually surprised that it took Ubisoft so long to produce something like this after the success of games like Genshin Impact.
Yeah, and I guess the big thing about this, though, is that it's like Genshin Impact is a completely different style of game, though, too. I mean, this talks about like the RPG part of it, though, but like
I mean, as far as like scope of like area and everything.
Oh, right. Okay, I get what you're talking about.
Yeah, how much area the gameplay is actually going to cover, and the fact that it's an open world like that. Like, I'm surprised that it took Ubisoft so long to actually to undertake something like this after, you know, Genshin Impact has shown so much success. So,
yeah, absolutely. That's like the key thing that I take away from this. Yeah, is this how long? But I think that they've just refocused on things, you know, and are hopeful, you know, it looks like they're making good strides here towards actually bringing a console experience for Assassin's Creed to mobile. Now, I would imagine, though, like what something like this would look like on, say, like a dedicated gaming phone, like the Asus ROG or the, what is it, Lenovo has one too, their Legion phone, basically any of those phones that are dedicated to gaming. I bet you this will probably end up handling things a little bit better. And over time, I even imagine, though, like I wouldn't be shocked to see something like this port over to PC or console, like way later down the line, similar to what we saw with some of the other Ubisoft stuff or Assassin's Creed things that were originally mobile specific, like for PSP or what have you.
Oh, yeah. Like the Vita as well. Yeah, like the Assassin's Creed China, Russia, the ones that were like side scrollers. This in comparison to that, it's almost like they've skipped a generation.
Oh yeah, it seems like it. But hey, you know what? I mean, at least it's in closed alpha right now. I did say beta there originally, but it's actually closed alpha right now. So what you saw there was at least alpha level, which means that, I mean, that's some pretty good progress there if that's alpha. It might be limited to some areas where they're maybe just tweaking things a bit more, but at the end of it all, yeah, alpha's, I mean, that's pretty dang good. So,
yeah.
There's no release date, I think, on it yet, though, on the mobile side. I guess it's just one we'll have to watch out for and go and play ourselves here once it does drop, you know, now that we've uninstalled Doom Diablo Immortal and Apex Legends Mobile from our devices and we have the space to install it. Let's carry on here to our third story, and of course this gets more into the bad news about different things, but Fortnite maker Epic Games has been fined $520 million, specifically due to Fortnite. So this article from NBC News talks about it, and it says that Epic Games agreed to pay a record settlement to resolve charges it violated children's privacy, exposed children and teenagers to potential harassment, and duped players of all ages into making unwanted in-game purchases. So Epic Games is going to pay $520 million. And this is actually one of the largest settlements that's had to pay, or that it's had to, it's had to pay in relation, or any game company's had to pay in relation to a big fine. So what this comes down to, it says, it's in regards to settling allegations that it collected personal data from children without first obtaining the consent of their parent or guardian, which, like, for example, Roblox, when I went to go sign my daughter up for it, it actually sent me a message to confirm, hey, are you allowing your daughter to play Roblox? It's like, okay, now I had to tie my email to it. I have to tie my permission set to it to say what she can play and what she can't play. And then that way, at least it keeps it, you know, age restricted and such. And I know mm-hmm. what's going on. There's nothing like that, at least there wasn't with Fortnite. I believe they've changed that since, though. They've also gone ahead and said that, it says Epic is also accused of exposing children and teenagers to bullying, threats, harassment, and dangerous and psychologically traumatizing issues such as suicide while using Fortnite through the game's default live voice and text function. I feel like that's almost like, it really hates saying it, it almost feels like that's a blanket thing for any multiplayer game, especially anything that multiplayer online yeah. game that deals with fast-paced combat like Fortnite. Go look at Apex. Go look at like some of the voice chat that we hear in Call of Duty. Go look at some of the stuff we hear in Halo, for example.
Yeah, it's all. I think part of the problem isn't necessarily the game companies. It's the players have access to the voice chat, and there's a lot of toxic people out playing video games. Let's face it.
And that's one of those things with the parental controls that it's like. For my kids to have their own Xbox accounts, I had to go and set them up on Xbox Family to be able to go mm-hmm. and say that, like, voice chat's disabled. They can only have, any friend requests have to be approved by, like, me. Anything that, any game ratings and that, you know, it's like, this is the max they can play in game ratings.
Right.
Anything like that. So, yeah, obviously there are some parental controls here that we're missing pretty well. But the last part, though, they make here is that the article goes on to say players of all ages were tricked into buying online credits via what the FTC called counterintuitive, inconsistent, and confusing button configuration, a phenomenon known as dark patterns that allegedly earned Epic hundreds of millions of dollars in unauthorized charges to consumers. So basically,
that's a bit of a stretch, I think.
Well, I guess what they did is they made it tougher, because I was reading about this in a different location. Epic Games Fine. Let's see, I gotta find the article I was originally reading on this. The big thing they were talking about, though, is that it's the way that the buttons were, like, I guess, laid out, like the way that it was more of like the flow of like the actual payment process or the actual item selection process when you're going through that made it tough to be able to backtrack, that the refund process was going to be would be harder to address. So yeah, it's a pretty big thing here. I'm trying to find the article I read that actually gave more details on it. They have details here.
I don't know. I just take a little bit different stance on it. Don't get me wrong. I feel like the whole microtransaction process anyway is predatory, especially when it comes down or it comes to games like Fortnite where they're charging, you know, up to $20 a character skin. And, you know, they're for kids. Let's be honest. When you're putting out cartoon characters that are, you know, for 12 plus cartoons, you're targeting children that are wanting to buy the skin so they can represent their favorite character from their favorite show or whatever. So that's a dark pattern in and of itself. But beyond that, I feel like, you know, is it the fact that people don't know that they can just close and reopen the application? Or I guess I'm kind of confused beyond the fact that, you know, they've always been trying to hammer the whole, you know, buy V-Bucks stance and, you know, get your favorite character skins, get your favorite items, you know. Oh, you can have this new umbrella for your parachute that looks like a rocket ship from this show. It's always fed off of, you know, the pop culture phenomena that's occurring as of that moment. Fortnite's always been really good to follow that, but I think that's the one advantage that they've had, but it's also put them in that area of the dark patterns because they lean into it quite heavily.
Yeah, that's, I think you're absolutely right with that. I honestly can't think of what else to add to that, though. That's the key part. You're pretty good at covering a lot of that stuff there, Kyle. but honestly, like, Fortnite's needed a lot of changes for some time, and it sounds like they had Epic's put all of these in place leading up to the actual announcement of the $520 million fine. So a lot of things that have been incorporated now. Let me reopen that article I had up that I was trying to reference here. So they have... in September, they implemented a high privacy default setting. They did update their chargeback policy, self-service refunds, instant cancellation of cosmetic purchases, and no random item loot boxes since 2019. So they've already at least made more adjustments, and they've even made, like Epic even said themselves, they made clear that the video game industry is a place of fast-moving innovation where player expectations are high and new ideas are paramount. Statutes written decades ago don't specify how gaming ecosystems should operate. The laws have not changed, but their application has evolved, and long-standing industry practices are no longer enough. We accepted this agreement because we want Epic to be at the forefront of consumer protection to provide the best experience for our players. And then they go on to say that all game developers should rethink steps they've taken to simplify payment flows. So that's a pretty big thing, at least, that Epic is, like, obviously, of course, that, you know, if they want to be at the forefront of this, they should have, you know, maybe been a little bit more up there anyway. But at least things have changed, though. Like, you know, they've at least got some parental controls in place now, I guess, that allow you to adjust that stuff. But, I mean, potentially, but could it be too little too late, especially with the popularity of Ninja over the last 5 years or so and the drive of Fortnite.
Because I mean, all the stuff that you just stated, it makes it sound like that Epic with Fortnite has been more ahead of the game than some of the other companies out there. You look at EA back at, you know, just a few years ago with the loot box allegations with Star Wars and how predatory they had become. And they tried to even defend the whole situation by calling it, what was it, mechanics.
Oh my God, I can't remember. I know what you're talking about, but I can't remember the name that they gave it.
Yeah, it was something silly. It was a roundabout way of saying gambling. And, you know, Fortnite has stayed on top of it. You know, they took away the loot boxes. They've upped their privacy controls. I mean, so it's funny that they get targeted when they've been really on the ball on jumping in and changing everything to try and move with culture, whereas some games and some publishers have been really, really slow in comparison.
Agreed. There's
surprise mechanics. I just remembered.
That's it. Thank you. Yeah, that's right. And a lot of it comes into the loot box stuff, though, too, where it's changed a lot in the other regions, specifically to call out like percentages and chances for like these different tiers and that to drop. But even with all of that, I mean, at least they're making adjustments and they're making changes to things because Fortnite is as popular as it is, and I don't see that stopping, especially because, like, in the scope of metaverse type stuff, they're the ones who are really kind of pushing that. Because, again, how many other games can you say that you can play as Goku and fight against Obi-Wan Kenobi and Indiana Jones, you know, in the same in the same thing, and then, you know, and then watch Naruto speedrun across the entire map? While John Wick is building a tower over in the other corner. It's like, you can't do that with anything else.
Yeah.
So it's a big fine. Obviously, it was well pointed out, you know, and the way that this fine works out is that not only is it a fine to the FTC, but also it's a fund that's going to be used to pay back for some of those predatory practices as it relates to the purchases and such. And I think between you and I, Kyle, I don't think we've spent any money ourselves in Fortnite. I think we've just, you know, used in-game credits. At least I don't think I've spent any money in Fortnite. I don't know.
Yeah, I haven't spent any money in Fortnite. Don't get me wrong. I've looked at some of the skins and I've thought, well, that's kind of neat. But you look at the prices and it's outrageous. And I feel like even just that, you know, targeting, you know, kids' cartoons, putting those characters in, putting items that are going to be, I don't know, the ones that like the parachutes or umbrellas or whatever that kids are going to want, the gun skins that kids are going to want, That putting those into the game and then charging outrageous prices, I think that's more predatory than some of the other stuff that has been going on. And in comparison, especially when you look at, you know, the fact that they have gone the distance of getting rid of the loot boxes, of increasing the privacy, allowing people to actually even refund accidental purchases, quote unquote accidental purchases, even. I don't know. They've done a lot. I feel like it is a big slap in the face, but I don't know. Maybe because the microscope is so close to them, I feel like it just shows them that they got to be more on the ball.
Yeah, and if they can help, like if they're ones that want to be at the forefront of everything, then, you know, at least when it comes to basically anything that's happening in the gaming world, then, you know, maybe they should be the one to set the standard. I don't know. You know, or at least be the shining example, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Regardless of that, though, let's carry on here into some more chaos, I suppose, in the world of VR now. John Carmack is leaving Meta, a.k.a. Facebook. John Carmack is going to be stepping down from his consulting CTO role at Meta. And so originally, of course, he was a part of Oculus starting in 2013, of course, working to help get Oculus off the ground with the Rift and the Kickstarter to get those prototypes all built and done and sent out. And then, of course, ended up being a part of the company when Facebook purchased them in 2014. And then, of course, it sounds like, you know, I mean, he's done a lot. He's been a big proponent of things with VR. You know, obviously, he's not like Palmer Luckey, where he's trying to create a VR headset that's going to kill you in real life if you die in the game. So thank God for that, because John Carmack obviously is known for Doom. So let's not get that out there.
Right, Doom and Quake, so, yeah.
But apparently, he says he's leaving because he's concerned about the, I guess, the way that things are going right now at Meta right now. He says primarily the issue is our efficiency. This is in his message to employees. Yeah, so let's see here. Let me read off part of his letter. It says, I have mixed feelings. Quest 2 is almost exactly what I wanted to see from the beginning. Mobile hardware, inside-out tracking, optional PC streaming, 4K-ish screen, cost-effective. Despite all the complaints I have about our software, millions of people are still getting value out of it. We have a good product. It is successful, and successful products make the world a better place. It could have happened a bit faster and been going better if different decisions had been made, but we built something pretty close to the right thing. The issue is our efficiency. So where he goes on to say, if I'm trying to sway others, I would say that an org that only has only known inefficiency is ill-prepared for the inevitable competition and or belt tightening. But really, it's the more personal pain of seeing a 5% GPU utilization number in production. I am offended by it. Let's see here. Yeah, this is where he goes really deeper into the efficiency part. We have a ridiculous amount of people and resources, but we constantly self-sabotage and squander effort. There is no way to sugarcoat this. I think our organization is operating at half the effectiveness that would make me happy. Some may scoff and contend we are doing just fine, but others will laugh and say, half? Ha, I'm at quarter efficiency. It's been a struggle for me. I have a voice at the highest levels here, so it feels like I should be able to move things, but I'm evidently not persuasive enough. A good fraction of the things I complain about eventually turn my way after a year or two passes and evidence piles up, but I've never been able to kill stupid things before they cause damage or set a direction and have a team that actually stick to it. I think my influence at the margins has been positive, but it has never been a prime mover. So, I guess apparently he's basically been trying. He feels like there's more that can be there's more that can be done in the space of what Oculus and what has become of Oculus now can do, like what we can actually see evolve and come from all of the work that he's been trying to put into it since he took on VR stuff almost 10 years ago or over 10 years ago. And the fact, though, that at least he's comfortable with where the Quest 2 is at is one thing. But the fact, though, that he says that we could do better, especially like the example that he put there, the personal pain of seeing a 5% GPU utilization number in production, means that there's more power that the headset could do other than its current iteration. That means that like some sort of software change or something can make that more powerful. And I got to say, please do that. I would like to see some more power out of the Quest 2, and I hear that there's something potentially coming down the line to make that possible software-wise, but needless to say, John Carmack here is not someone to be trifled with when it comes to VR. I mean, this guy knows what he's doing, and he's been a big proponent for VR and has basically been there at the forefront before we even saw anything like the HTC Vive or the Valve Index or the Reverb or whatever else there has been out there, you know?
Well, I mean, being one of the guys behind, you know, Doom and Quake, he saw something that was there in the industry long before, you know, it ever occurred. And you think about it, we're still talking about original Doom and Quake today. So for him to have that type of foresight and then, you know, be so far into it and look at where we're at with the technology and say, you know, why aren't we utilizing more of it? I mean, you look at the a console's lifespan, and even games at the beginning of like a generation in comparison to what comes out at the end. At the end, they are pushing the boundaries of what anything the hardware can do. And I mean, if John Carmack says he's been working on, you know, the Oculus for 10 plus years, I think we should probably be there at this point instead of being at the point where we're trying to cut efficiency, you know. Oh, it's only 5% efficient, you know. Well, why aren't we making it more efficient, you know? Why aren't we utilizing more of the processor? Why aren't we seeing better games and, you know, that are playing at a higher bit rate or, you know, I don't care if my headset's going to die in, you know, 45 minutes, but let me get the best experience out of that 45 minutes.
Yeah. And he's like, not only that, like, not only does he want to see more of the value out of the headset, though. I mean, obviously we could see it in the hardware space, but there's a couple things, I guess, the article here from The Verge makes mention about, and I didn't actually get to listen to this talk, but I guess this was back in October he talked about this. Here's what the article says verbatim. He pointed out how it's difficult for users to quickly update headsets and seemed very skeptical about its progress with Horizon Worlds as a social platform and about Meta's decision to raise the price for the Quest 2 and the introduction of a $1,500 Quest Pro. He goes on to say, quote, "I've always been clear that I'm all about the cost-effective mass-market headsets being the most important thing for us and for the adoption of VR." And I think that's a very excellent point, is that the Quest 2 and the Quest line has been the entry point really for VR, not Google Cardboard, not the headsets that exist where you just slap your phone into it and go, even though
right.
The Samsung Gear VR was actually a pet project of his while at Oculus. But the key part of it, though, is that by having something affordable means that it's something easy enough for customers and consumers to be able to go and grab onto and start to adapt to, instead of saying, hey, your entry into the market now is going to cost you potentially $700 at minimum.
Yeah, and that's another weird thing. They went from, you know, one of the most affordable entries into the market to their next tier being one of the most expensive on the market. Yeah. That's insane. I mean, there's like another tier above that, but it's like 8K gaming and it's like $2,000, you know?
Yeah. And it's like for those experiences that you get with like the Quest Pro, you could go, even though it's like, it's got the battery pack in it though as well. Like we've already got, I can't remember if it's HTC. I think it is HTC that said they've got a new headset coming up here that they're going to be showing off at CES. We've got Valve, of course, still with the Index. And you know, I mean, I know that's a tethered one. You've got the HP Reverb in a tethered VR headset. You've still got so many other opportunities out there to have all this high-quality VR without actually it costing an arm and a leg. Granted, yes, like things like the Reverb has the highest quality screen, I think, out there right now for a consumer headset. And it's not necessarily the most expensive, but it's also not the best experience out there. It's up there, but it's not necessarily the best. Whereas if you want that better gaming experience, you're looking more at like the Valve Index or the HTC Vive Pro or...
Right.
Oh my gosh, I can't remember the other name of it. I don't want to say HTC Vision. I can't remember just the other name they gave to their other headsets. But needless to say about all of it, they've in the long run at least have, you know, there's other options out there and Meta could have done better.
Yeah, I feel like they could have done better personally too, because I mean, you look at it, yeah, they have one of the best headsets on the market, but I mean, when you when you have one of the most accessible, affordable headsets on the market, why on God's green earth would you raise the price of it and then decide you're going to make another iteration that takes the price of one of the best headsets on the market and shames it?
Mm-hmm. No kidding.
And like it, oh, $999? Shh. $1,500, you know?
Yeah,
it
exactly.
It doesn't make any sense.
Right, and then the competition even, like, you know, like, what was it? We had talked about the potential idea of the price change on the Quest 2 being related to the PSVR 2, which is a completely separate market anyway, because you have to have a mm-hmm. PlayStation 5 to use the PSVR 2. You can't just plug it into your computer, whereas the Quest 2 has the option to work wirelessly and play games directly off the headset, or mm-hmm. use a link cable, or use that AirLink functionality to stream games from your computer over to the headset. That's, regardless of that fact, though, like, it's just one of those things, at least to make clear, that it's like, Meta doesn't seem to know what they're doing. And by John Carmack leaving, I think things are not going to be getting... They're going to get worse before they get better.
I don't know. It's just like they take this successful business platform. They look at it. They say, what can we do to improve on it? And then they just throw everything out the window and start fresh. Yeah. That's just what it seemed like to me, but I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But let's carry on here to our last story, since we're talking about hardware. This is actually maybe some good news for people. I don't know. And that is about Valve wanting to make or wanting to take another crack at making a new Steam controller. So Steam Deck designers Lawrence Yang and Pierre Lou Griffiths talked with The Verge about the controller. And they said, yeah, we want to make it happen. It's just a question of how and when. And carried on saying, I think it's likely we'll explore that because it's something we've wanted as well. Right now, we're focusing on the Deck, so it's a little bit of the same thing as the microconsole question. It's definitely something where we'd be excited to work with a third party or explore ourselves. So, of course, they're very focused on the Steam Deck, but I want to kind of come back around to the Steam controller because I have one right here in my hand, Kyle, okay? I know you mm-hmm. can't see it, of course, but you know I have one, okay?
And, oh, yeah.
Like, I think that if Valve has learned the hardware side a little bit better with what they've done with the Steam Deck and can just basically rip the controller part out of it and turn that into an actual full-fledged handheld, do you think it's possible it would be more successful? Do you think it's possible that it would work better instead of something that's, you know, compared to like an Xbox controller is more like, you know, this weird concave looking monstrosity here?
I think so. Don't get me wrong. I really wanted one of the Steam controllers, even though that it had its issues, and there were some things that I personally didn't care for with the touch sensitive D-pad or touch capacitive, actually.
Oh my god!
Because the
yeah.
way it operated.
Yeah.
And then of course the touch capacitive right analog stick, but they've come a long way with the touch pads on the Steam Deck. And if they were to swap those with, you know, the pads that were on the controller and add that touch capacitive, well, I think it might actually be on there. I haven't used the mouse pads personally all that much on mine, but I think it would be awesome if they put out another controller. One of the things that I think that made the Steam controller not as successful was the actual shape of it. Not a super comfortable controller to hold, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's like what they did compared to an Xbox controller. Hold on a second. Hey, Ben, hand me your Xbox controller here really quick. I'm grabbing my kid, hand me his Xbox controller, but it's like just for the audience. But you can see here, let me move myself here. So it's like you can see the concave bit of the Steam controller versus the, you know, the... like where it's like your hands go versus the Xbox controller, which, you know, the actual, it's like it's flipped around. So it's like it's better almost like that way is where they equal out. But it's like, OK, why did Valve decide to do this? But they must have had their reasons. But I would like to see a new one. And I would hope. Sorry, my headset's starting to go on me here. So I got to plug in, too. But I'll keep talking as I plug in. the biggest thing is that they've got to work towards figuring out their hardware. They've really got to work towards figuring out their hardware because they've already had great
charging
successes
battery.
With the, there we go. Okay. I think I can hear you still, right, Kyle?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I hope so.
Yeah, there we go. We're good. So one of the key things is that, like, they've got the hardware figured out with the Steam Deck. And I've played on it enough. You know, I've had a little bit of time with it. Not as much as you, obviously, being an owner. But I've played on one enough, and I feel like it's comfortable to hold. It's nice to handle. So by shrinking down that form factor to actually being a controller itself is the best thing that they could probably do. It's like, take the best thing here that you've got right now and make it work. And I know the touchpad part is a little bizarre anyway, but if they can handle mapping everything out just right and they still have the touchpads there and they're just an auxiliary thing to use if you want, cool, that's fine. Make it just, you know, make it like you would the Steam Deck, just narrow it down to just the controls.
You know, honestly, if they made something that, even if it was more squarish, similar to like how the docked Joy-Cons look on a controller, kind of that weird like boxy shape that it gives, I wouldn't even mind something like that if they threw on the touchpads on there, give me a couple extra buttons or whatever, something that allows me to play on my computer, maybe sync multiple devices to it so I could play on my cell phone as well. That would be awesome. I think they would sell the crap out of those controllers.
Yeah, and
especially if it had, you know, Bluetooth capability to the Steam Deck when you were using it docked, and it maybe provided some extra functionality, say with a Steam button, you know, that you would be able to access that same Steam menu when in conjunction with the Steam Deck. It would be perfect.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what I'm trying to do here is I found a picture of the Steam Deck online, and I'm trying to just quickly use GIMP here to shrink it down and crop it so that way we could kind of like have an idea. But I like that thought though of basically like keep the same motif there as you would. So that way when you're, what do I want to say here? Where's the actual button? There it is, rectangular select. So that way when you're jumping between, it's like, you know, you're going to have that sense of familiarity all the way across, you know? I mean, obviously, of course, this is just a goofy thing here, just stitching these together, but I don't care right now.
I mean, get me wrong, I don't really want that concave face on the controller. I could do without that. I could do without the egregiously large and angular, oddly angular grips. But aside from that, the controller had really cool features.
Yeah, I just,
like I said, I was a real big fan of the touch capacitive D-pad. The fact that you could use it in different ways. The fact that it had sensors that were able to go from the center of the D-pad out to the arms, and you know, there was a lot that the controller was underutilized.
Fair, yeah, I agree, but I mean, obviously, this is not what this thing is going to look like because this is already a monstrosity anyway. But let me see if I can actually show this here really quick. what I want to do here, I want to change. Nope, that's a picture of the thing here. Let's see your properties. Let's change that to GIMP here really quick. Yeah, there we go. All right. So, yeah, this is a monstrosity, to say the least. But I just simply took it and just cropped it down. so maybe not directly taking the Steam Deck, splitting it with the screen. I know you'll see this in the stream in a second, Kyle. But splitting it down and doing like that necessarily, because that seems like a monstrosity in of its own right. But I just think about, like, you know, where things lay out at. Like, would those touch buttons, the touchpads become more of a problem? Would the, you know, would those become more of an issue? I don't know.
You know, and like I said, I think it would probably have more of the wing style shape like the Xbox or more modern controllers have. What you have kind of created almost reminds me of, I want to say it was the Razer Jungle Cat that you could buy for cell phones. It actually came with a cell phone case that it docked. Yeah, it was the predecessor to the Kishi, actually.
Ah, okay. Okay.
But it also had a center docking unit that it didn't charge it or anything, but it had a center docking unit that you could actually dock it similar to like a a Switch controller to their controller dock. So it was more like a standard actual controller rather than having, you know, the two Joy-Cons or whatnot.
I gotcha. Yeah, that's kind of what it did look like there especially. But yeah, I think you're right, though, is that we would see it more like without the concaveness of the top part here of like the Steam controller, but imagining it, especially in the sense of what a, you know, taking like what works on the actual Steam Deck's control environment there, like the actual physical environment, and turning that into something that could be in a regular handheld form. Because, yeah, you're right. It's like the Steam controller is Bluetooth already. It's already got Bluetooth built into it, and you can use it with other devices via Bluetooth if you want. You know,
but
or
I mean,
of course,
you know, we do have the new Bluetooth classification coming out, and they could put, you know, a multi-device Bluetooth in it, so you could, you know, be synced to your computer, your Steam Deck, and your cell phone, and all you would have to do is, you know, just hit a button maybe and swap it to that particular device.
Yeah, exactly.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. So, as we wait to see if Valve may actually take a crack at a new Steam controller, we need to move on to the last part of the news. Main stories are done. It's time for the one, the only, the Kyle to take over with the quest markers. Kyle, are you ready to go?
I think so.
Well, what do we got, dude?
For our first quest marker of the evening, Goat Simulator 3. Ad was pulled due to a GTA clip making an appearance in the ad.
Say what?
So according to sources, unfortunately the advert has been pulled down, but one of the newest Goat Simulator 3 trailers actually had the leaked banks, or what was it, the bank scene?
Diner
scene, excuse me. Sorry. The leaked diner scene from GTA 6 in it, and they had put in just kind of to make it more Goat Simulator 3, they had input the NPC Sean from the game into the trailer, but unfortunately after the trailer was aired, it did cause a debacle, and now the trailer has been pulled, and there might be some problems between Take-Two and Rockstar and the Goat Simulator 3 makers. So unfortunately we'll have yet to see that unfold, but right now the trailer is not visible online. Of course, the Rockstar ninjas this time have come out of the woodwork to forcibly DMC claim all of them.
yay
for ninjas. And in our next quest marker for the evening, God of War is to get a live action series developed by Amazon. The series will actually be set, unfortunately, in the new God of War universe. It will not take place at the beginning of the timeline, unfortunately, but will be coming to us from the makers of the Wheel of Time series and The Expanse. So, I don't know if anyone's watched Wheel of Time. I listened to quite a few of the books. They're just way too long to read. And unfortunately, it's like, I think it's like 13 books long. And each of the books are like 1,200 pages. But just great series. They're doing an awesome job on the visuals and their interpretation of the books. So I'm really excited to see God of War, you know, get taken on by the same group. I don't know if you've heard much on it or seen much of the Wheel of Time yourself, but I think it'll be a really awesome take on it personally.
Awesome.
And in our last quest marker of the day, Kojima says Microsoft understood his unusual game when others thought he was mad. According to Kojima, going to other studios, of course, he is developing the Death Stranding 2, but alongside of Death Stranding 2, he's developing a game called Overdose that he is developing with Microsoft. Went to other game studios at first, of course, we imagine that from the way talks are going, it was Sony and potentially actually Stadia that he was going to work with. But everyone thought he was crazy until he came to Microsoft. And I guess a big portion of it may have to do with the cloud gaming. So, of course, with Kojima, you know, he's always ahead of the trend. He says in the 30 years that he's been making games, he tends to get bored. So it's awesome that the industry is so quickly changing to develop new toys to play with and new things to learn and expand on. So we can hopefully look for the horror game Overdose coming to Xbox and Microsoft platforms, and maybe even other platforms if these Microsoft Activision Blizzard deal has anything to do with it in the future. But until then, we have to keep our ears to the ground to hear more news from Mr. Kojima himself. But that is it for the quest markers for this evening.
And with that being it for the quest markers, that means it is it for the NPC's Weekly News Roundup for December 23rd, 2022. So, of course, from myself and from Kyle, we would like to wish you all a happy holidays and Merry Christmas, of course, as Christmas is this coming Sunday, but you might be listening to this after the fact, so consider it a belated Merry Christmas, depending on when you listen to us again, though, too. But, of course, with that said, be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast platform of choice, be it Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to them, we're probably on it. Go subscribe to our podcast there. If you're not sure exactly which platforms we're on, go check out our homepage of anchor.fm/the-NPCs-podcast for all of our past episodes, including this one. With that said, of course, don't forget to check us out also on social media on Facebook and Twitter at the NPCs Podcast, and, of course, subscribe here on our YouTube channel. With all that, thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. We'll catch you all next week.
Laters.